from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week when members of the Newspaper Guild of Rochester went on strike and might have figured that a strike would be short-lived. After all, the eclipse was approaching. The Democrat and Chronicle had major coverage plans, interviews, the works. Surely Gannett would want to intervene and finally settle this out, get a contract done. But that has not come to pass. And today the Guild remains on strike. It's fair to wonder if Gannett has any intention of securing a deal. The Guild says they just want Gannett to bargain in good faith. They're not asking for the moon. They want a fair deal. And this hour we're checking in with them. We'll talk about the future of their industry. This comes at a time where my understanding, and they'll explain a little bit more, my understanding is there are replacement workers in town, but certainly not the number of 24. That's how many members of the Guild are currently on strike. The chair of the Newspaper Guild of Rochester is Tracy Schumacher, food and drink reporter. Welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us very much.
The vice chair, education reporter, is Justin Murphy. Welcome back.
Hello, Evan.
Also with us is Markwell Slaughter, who is a sports reporter and member of the Guild. Thank you for being here, Markwell.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon.
It is good afternoon, yes. What is time after yesterday, Markwell? What
oh,
indeed.
My gosh.
Kayla Kane is with us, public safety reporter and member of the Guild as well. Thank you for being here.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Tracy, I think it's fair to say that, you know, in late last week when news of this was really kind of hitting the public, the assumption was, hey, good timing. You've got leverage here. But Gannett's not going to let you strike through one of the biggest news events that this city has seen. And yet they did.
Yeah, they did.
So are you surprised at that?
Well, in retrospect, I'm not. I thought we'd come to an agreement. I really did.
Okay. And so take me a little bit through this as the chair of the Guild here. Take me through a couple parts of this. The decision to strike, how it's made, and then how that message gets to the company and what the company's reaction was vis-a-vis what you thought the reaction might be. Can you take us through that?
Sure. Well, the thing to remember is our contract expired in 2019, which means you operate under the previous contract. And we've been at the bargaining table for just over 2 years. And we've made really good progress in probably one of the most important areas, which is to get fair wages for everyone. We have reporters that have been with the company for decades who are vastly underpaid. And so thanks to other actions we've done that you've, you know, talked to us about, you know, we've made really good progress. But there seems to be like impediments and roadblocks thrown up every so often that prevent us from getting to a final contract. And so we want to get that money in our coworkers' pockets. We don't want this to be delayed any longer. And it seemed to make sense that all 24 of us were being, well, not all 24, there's a couple remote, but most of us were being asked to fan around Rochester to cover this spectacle in the sky, and that it would make sense that we'd say, hey, we'll do this. We need our contract done. And we have all the time in the world to get this done, and we're not that far apart, and we can get this done. And we bargained on Thursday and made good progress, and it really seemed like we'd get to a deal. Friday morning, things still seemed like we were marching along the right path. And then Friday afternoon, they kind of went back to the roadblocks, which is something we've experienced for 2 years, but it kind of added a position that they hadn't mentioned in 2.5 years, you know, that would have had to been negotiated all since, you know, it just was clear. I think they were calling our bluff, and I think probably somebody way up the food chain was like, they're threatening to strike. Let's see if they're going to do it. Or, I mean, there's all kinds. We've had theories about what might have happened Friday afternoon. But yeah, on Friday, it just seemed like they pulled the plug, and there wasn't bargaining scheduled Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. And so we were back at the table this morning.
So you went from Friday morning, assuming we're close, we can get this done, to Friday afternoon saying they think we're bluffing and this might not get done, to over the weekend, what, does it go dark? No phone calls? I mean, even on Sunday, the day before, they're not calling you saying, all right, I guess you're serious.
Well, I think there was some back and forth thing, I think, with the lawyers. But no, there really wasn't anything happening other than us, you know, gearing up for things.
I want to apologize. To my great chagrin, I haven't been able to get their corporate attorneys or the owners of this company on this program with you. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Oh, I think it would be very interesting. I'd listen to that.
We've barely been able to get them on the phone ourselves.
Yeah, we all have that in common, I guess. So, Tracy, by yesterday morning, it was clear you weren't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And the process that listeners might want to know about is twofold, just for the paper itself. Do they bring in replacement workers? And then, you know, how do you all feel about that? Are you in touch with them at all? Are you kind of radio silence on work? And how do you then proceed now that we're post-Eclipse with negotiating?
Well, we definitely don't communicate with them.
Yeah, right.
And there are some editors that have gone out and done stories like, it's one of those things that we can see who's in town. Like, you know, somebody tweeted about it. And some of these people are young staff members who actually one we've been in touch with that didn't even know that they were coming into town to, you know, work through a strike. So, I don't know that we want to be too hard on those particular people, but there are definitely editors that came that knew exactly what was happening.
Okay.
And, you know, one thing I think, excuse me to interrupt, Tracy, that it's important to note is that part of the reason that they had to fly people in from out of town is because the regular pool of freelancers and college students and interns and people who we communicated with ahead of time unanimously declined to take part in things. There are college students at Syracuse who had plans to cover some things. They all decided not to. RIT, the local journalism schools, the folks that put in freelance columns and whatnot for the DNC sometimes. I think unanimously everybody who we've been able to get on the phone and explain the situation to has fallen in line with our strike.
Okay. And so where does it go next, Tracy?
We had bargaining this morning. We had we made some progress on wages. And the companies offered us a total of 3 more hours this week. We're not that far apart. And if they bargain in good faith, we should be able to get it done.
Define good faith. Describe what makes a bargaining session bad faith versus good faith.
I think all of us have been through way, like, you know, you're a journalist, like you're trained as a journalist and you're kind of dropped in this situation. And so you kind of learn on the job. And I always get so nervous about talking about this stuff. And but like, for example, there was the lawyers pass documents back and forth. And when they make changes, they will highlight a change that they've made so that you can see where the bargaining is going. Well, at some point, the lawyers for the guild realized that there were words put in that they hadn't seen before, like words into the contract that weren't highlighted, you know, and maybe it was an oversight, but you want to trust that you know what things are changing as you're going back and forth with the proposals. So like having, you know, language and words put in that you hadn't noticed before.
Without notifying you, hoping that you're going to sign something without reading
it?
That sounds very underhanded.
Well, if we're in good faith, we'll think that they, you know, that maybe there was some kind of clerical error or something.
Okay, so what you're saying is the best case scenario was it was incompetence.
Uh-huh.
The worst case, it was intentional.
They said they thought the document was getting a little bit too messy, so they just tidied it up a little bit.
Too many colors. That's what they said. Too many colors on the paper.
This is why we've got to get them in this room. I really want to talk to some of the folks behind their bargaining team. I mean, listen, it's an open invitation for this talk show. Unfortunately, they haven't come on over the years, but I would love that. I would love to find out, to Mark Wells' point, if it's just too many colors, we have to tidy it up, versus how do you ethically change a document and not immediately let your bargaining partner know that you've made changes? Okay, so let's set that aside for a moment here. Tracy does seem to indicate you've made some progress on wages. You got 3 more hours of negotiating this week, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So can you get a deal done this week? Is that within reach? Is that plausible?
I think if somebody really wanted to get down to business, we could get done in a half hour.
Okay.
I it remains to be seen how serious they are. So, yeah, we can get it done in 3 hours.
What is the longest the strike could go?
It's an open-ended strike. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it does help that we have a GoFundMe out there that's raising strike funds for us that are helping to keep us afloat. The community has come through just in a few days with I think it's up to 19,000 maybe right now. You know, that does help. It really is encouraging.
You know, Evan, none of us have ever been on strike before, and we've got guild members in all different life circumstances. And I think that at the beginning, one of the concerns that one naturally has is how everyone's going to respond to going out on strike and then to staying out on strike, because it's not
sure.
It's not anybody's first choice. What we have learned over the last 4 days is that people are not only, tolerating it and trudging it along as last as they can, but the spirits have been raised every single day. There's been enormous unity, and in particular in the face of some of the tricks and tactics that the company has played on us. For instance, they have often communicated to us that, you know, we get paid work cell phones, it's on the company plan. So they say, don't worry about wasting your money on your own phone. You can just use this one for whatever. The first thing that they did when we went on strike was turn off everybody's phones, so that those phones that we had been led to believe were for whatever use, we had to scramble and get separate phones. So those things that I assume have been intended at every turn to divide us and make
dissuade the strike,
make us worried about the future, have absolutely had the opposite effect. We don't want to be on strike any longer than, you know, I agree with Tracy. If the lawyers called each other right now, they could be done and we could announce a settlement before the show ends. But if it takes until Friday, or if it takes until next Friday, or whatever it is, it's been amply demonstrated within our guild, and I assume to them that we'll be ready for that.
Let me ask your colleagues here. Mark, well, when you think about being out on strike, Justin's point, I think, is not only an important one, but anyone who's ever been part of a situation where members have to decide whether to strike, it is true that it's impossible that everyone would be in the same life situation or feel the same financial wherewithal to do it. And it's going to be a hard call on how long you can go. How do you feel about where you are now, and how do you feel about how long you can go?
I'm pretty optimistic because I've only been here 4 years, and when I first started hearing the word strike, it was all confusing to me, and I wasn't ready for it, but it only take a few bargaining sessions to realize that these guys are petty. They're not trying to move the needle at all, and we needed some real action that we can really hit them with. So I've been waiting for this for a while, actually, and I'm glad to work with people that are a lot smarter than me that seen the leverage that we had coming. And as soon as I didn't realize how big the Eclipse coverage was. And then on top of that, our sports department, we're doing an all Greater Rochester winter all-star teams. And for any publication, these all-star teams are one of the big drivers of subscriptions and sales. So I just with all that together, and I'm still surprised. I'm very overwhelmed with all the support and to get 100% to want to strike. But I thought we needed this. I've been all for this, and I'm very fortunate that we have a community that's been supporting us like this. I couldn't have dreamed anything like this. But I've been all for this, and I was just waiting to see how many people would join us, and I'm very happy to see we got 100% over here.
Kayla, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with Marquell. You know, everything that I've seen over the last 4 days has just encouraged me to, you know, stay strong and stay with the unit. You know, we have reporters out there. Striking is not easy. You know, it's tiring. It's emotionally exhausting. But we have reporters and journalists and photographers out there every single day trying to hype each other up and keep spirits high and also check in on one another and like, hey, are you doing okay? Here's some fruit and granola bars and coffee and donuts that I decided to bring, you know, to the table to keep everyone going. And yeah, I'm really proud of like the way that we've banded together. I feel like I've gotten to know my colleagues better. A lot of us spent yesterday the eclipse together, even though we were all off. You know, we decided a couple of us met up here and there and hung out. And yeah, I think what I'll take away from all of this is I feel like our newsroom is stronger than it's ever been. And I'm so proud of that.
Well, newsrooms across the country, we know, are smaller than they used to be. And the cuts that have happened and happened and happened in Rochester happen in Cleveland, where I'm from. They happen in just about every market you can think of. And that becomes difficult. And I want to ask, you know, I was thinking about some of the things Justin was mentioning. I want to ask you a little bit about leverage. I want to ask all of our guests about this. You know, in the days leading up to the eclipse, I think it was reasonable to assume that a parent company would not want their workers on strike during a major international news event. And the fact that it was allowed to happen probably indicates an abrogation of duty of Gannett's part, also a disrespect, I think, probably for newspaper coverage in general and for the workers and for a community. But you also hear the naysayers, the people who will say, well, there's less local coverage in my paper and I want more local stories, which I'm sure everybody in this room would like to do more local stories. But when you hear that and they say, you don't have any leverage, I mean, your subscriptions are down, people aren't reading physical newspapers as much as they used to. How do you think about leverage and a position that you have to try to get higher wages, get better benefits at a time when there is declining newspaper reading?
Well, you know, I would say that that is a dilemma for the whole premise of their company, for the whole business that Gannett is in. And those people are correct that to the extent that the print or website of the Democrat and Chronicle is fluffed out with content from elsewhere in the state or elsewhere in the country, that's not a valuable product. That's largely what you saw this morning or yesterday if you were on the website for the Democrat and Chronicle, which, by the way, I should say we're asking people not to click on during the strike. But you saw a lot of stuff that was either generic, like, you know, what do you do if you burn your eyes, or, you know, things that could have been gathered by anybody, things that you can bring in a 22-year-old from out of state and expect him or her to jump in and start doing. That's our whole premise, is that we bring something different from that. And, you know, I there's something I'd really like to sort of point out on that point. We've spent, Tracy and I and others have spent more hours of our lives in the last 2 years in bargaining than we will ever get back. And for all that time, the people across us at the table have been the attorney that Gannett's hired and our executive editor, Mike Killian. We always talk about Gannett, we're on strike against Gannett, but those are the human beings that were opposite. And Mike is somebody that we work with in the normal course of business every day. We talk about our stories with him. He helps us with different things. And before all this, I don't think I heard anybody say a negative word about Mike. It has been very disheartening to see how, on one hand, he has always said all of these encouraging things to us and has expressed such an appreciation and a value for our work, to then turn around and say, well, you know, actually, we don't need them anyway for the eclipse. We can just bring in some editors from wherever, and they'll do the same job.
Did he actually say
no,
that?
No, he didn't say that.
You're saying his actions indicate that disposition.
That's right. He has, at best, sat by silently while their attorney has taken derogatory and offensive and threatening positions toward us. I'll give you an example. One of the things that we're fighting about is protections against AI. We want language in the contract that says guild members will not be laid off because of some new development in AI. They've agreed to do that for 2 years, but they don't want that to go any farther beyond 2 years. And they say, and Mike said this himself, of course we don't want to do that. That's never our intention, but you never know where the technology is going to go. And so what that says to us is that they value our contributions until AI gets good enough to more or less approximate it, after which point the situation changes somehow. So I think, you know, I said how a lot of what we've gone through has had the effect of uniting us more. I would also say for myself personally, and I think a lot of the rest of us, it has been personally hurtful to witness the way that Mike is acting in this and not driving it forward. And we understand that he's not Frankenet himself, but that has been their conceit all along, is that Mike is the boss. Mike is the one who's in charge and making deals. That's what they've said consistently at the table. We would have thought that with the relationship that we've had with Mike before this, with his professed appreciation for us and for the work we do, that we would have had a deal by now.
Is it irreparable with him?
I don't want to go so far as to say irreparable. We hope to be back in the newsroom as soon as possible. I assume it's always the case after a situation like this. There are hard feelings, and you get over that, however you go about getting over hard feelings. But it's changed, that's for sure.
So I want to say this about AI, because there's a lot I want to talk to all of our guests on this subject about. But let me just kind of stay on the point that Justin is making about AI. The company is admitting through their negotiating that they will use AI to replace human workers when it is feasible. Otherwise, they would agree to this. Otherwise, it would be part of the values of the company that owns newspapers that says AI may be very good at doing a lot of things, but it doesn't have the capacity to cover local communities at the standard that we expect. And there is a detriment to farming that work out to machines. And we're not going to do it. I have no idea if XXI has ever talked about this. It's interesting you bring this up, because I'm sitting here going, I have no idea. But I can say that I would not work for a company that would want to replace people with AI, especially if you're working in journalism. So that doesn't surprise me, in the same way that, as we talked about last week on Connections, the CEO of, and again, I keep forgetting this company, but you know, he was talking to Fox News and he said they'd replaced 90% of their workforce with AI already. He viewed this as a good thing. And the host asked him, you know, that sounds kind of brutal. And he says, well, that's brutal if you think like a human, which I would hope that that's how you think.
Yeah.
And so that's the Gannett situation. And they're telling you they will do this, essentially, aren't they?
They're not only telling us they will do it. It's not a hypothetical. They have, in fact, done it. One of the Gannett properties is a consumer reports sort of thing called Reviewed.com. And they did, in fact, run a lot of exceedingly sloppy, poorly done AI product reviews while at the same time paying journalists whose job it is to create those things. One of the effects of that, by the way, has been that AI, Gannett itself has really contributed to a wave of labor activity at all of its different sites, including Reviewed.com. Within New York and New Jersey and in the Atlantic region where we are, you saw, of course, the Austin American Statesman was on strike over this week. I very much don't expect that ours is going to be the last action that they have to face in 2024.
Okay, so AI is part of this contract. It's not the be-all, end-all. I mean, there's a lot of different parts of any contract, but that's interesting that it's already a part of a contract. And Gannett is already saying, yeah, we'll give you a 2-year grace period, and then we'll see how AI can replace you in 2 years. That would worry me. It should worry every community. Listeners know that I feel very strongly that every community of every size needs strong local newspapers. And yeah, I'm a homer. I'm glad we've got City. I wish City didn't have so many former people from the Democrat and Chronicle. In the way that I wish that both were vibrant and growing and big and strong. But you've got Gannett to deal with, and there we are. Before I turn to your colleagues for that point, on a couple of these points, let me grab Christopher and Gail on the phone. Hey, Christopher, go ahead.
Hey, I support everybody that's on the picket line. I've been down there myself and encourage others to do so. I come from a family with one that's a journalist down in New York City, Robert Henley, And I can tell you one of the things that, having worked closely with journalists throughout my lifetime as an AIDS activist and a labor activist, is that the journalists themselves don't like to be the focus of attention. It's because they're worried about getting the story, not being the story. So, and I think a lot of times people confuse that subtlety, that care, that kindness is somehow weakness. And I think that's a terrible mistake that Gannett is making, because people do actually care, because journalists discern information. You know, if you're Gary Craig, you're sitting in the courtroom hour after hour in the George Moses case. If you're Justin Murphy, you're reading all these educational reports. You're also sifting through community resource collaborative court documents. If you're Tracy, if you're Marsha, if you're the sports folks, all of you are engaged, where it requires discernment of what you're getting. Because so many times, all the people send out to companies is PR press releases and want you to repeat it verbatim. And that's the danger of AI, is that this content is actually literally fake news.
Christopher, that's well said. And I will just, as a journalist myself, I will endorse that concern. AI can definitely write press releases. AI can produce documents that look like PR campaign strategies. AI can take news releases and craft them into what is functionally a readable story. But that is regurgitation of releases. That is not discernment. He used the word discernment. And I think that's the key here.
You know, Evan, I can't think of a single time in the 12 years that I've been at Gannett that they have managed to generate positive publicity for themselves. But one easy way, could be, we as a rule are not going to chase AI down the rabbit hole. We are not going to displace our workers.
Absolutely.
That's an easy thing to say. And for once in the history of the world, everyone would say, good job, Gannett. You did a good thing.
For the first time. Justin's never been on this program talking about contract negotiations without just putting that little shiv right in there.
I think you spike my water when I get here.
That's just water in that cup. Before I grab Gail in Rochester, wow, you've lit up the phones. I haven't even mentioned the phone number. People actually care about print journalism. Isn't this refreshing? Let me ask all of you. I'll go around the table here. Kayla, how do you feel about this piece of the negotiation with AI?
Well, so I came to Rochester. I'm from here. I was born here. I've lived here my whole life. My dad delivered the newspaper for most of my life.
That's cool.
So, you know, for me, journalism is really about connecting with people. It's about connecting with our neighbors and our community. And simply put, a computer cannot do that.
Very, very direct there. Tracy, what do you see?
So I take art classes at, and one of the people that I encountered in an art class was saying, I said something about AI, and she said, you can't halt technology. Why are you even going to try? Well, we're not looking to halt technology, and we're fine with using AI as a tool. I'm not sure how that would look, because I'm not that well versed in it, but it's not like we're trying to totally eliminate the technology or the use of it. We're trying to ask that it not replace us, and that's what we're looking for.
Okay, Markwell?
Yeah, AI can't do what any of us can do. I'm out on the field multiple days a week making connections. I know the history. I've only been here a few years, but just from research and archivals, there's no way a computer can duplicate the connections that we can that all of me and my colleagues can do.
Yeah, I mean, let me just one other note on to build on Tracy's point about, well, you can't stop progress. I don't know how you would stop AI if you wanted to. What I am saying as the host of this program, as a journalist at XXI, is that I think we have to have conversations instead of just saying, well, it's all coming, so I guess it's taking all of our jobs. You know, you couldn't stop it. Let's not wake up one day in 2 years or five or 10 or 50 and say, well, we displaced 80% of our workforce, as Goldman Sachs says it is possible in the next generation. We didn't recreate any economic systems. We didn't think about what that would cost. And you think power is concentrated now, political and economic power is concentrated now? Just wait until AI displaces 30% of jobs, 80% of jobs, anything in between. So the argument, well, you can't stop progress. That's not progress. That's not what a healthy society looks like. And it's okay to talk about that. That's not saying we want to remove all technology. It's saying just because you can, should you do that? That's it. That's all. Gail in Rochester, I think, has a question. Go ahead, Gail.
Yes. Is it possible to make out a check to Newspaper Guild and send it by mail instead of doing the GoFundMe?
Oh, Tracy, did you put plant callers in here?
Well, you can come to the street corner at Main and Clinton, and we'll gladly take it from you. So actually, people have come up to this. Seriously, people have come up to the street corner and given me cash, and then I just turn around and I put it in the GoFundMe, just so it's all in the same place and we have accounting for it. But we can talk. You can message me.
I suspect that we're giving you all web-based instructions, but I suspect that if you went to the News Guild of New York's website, you could find an address for that sort of thing.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you for your support.
So people can contribute to your cause.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate the thought, for sure.
Thanks for the phone call, Gail. Appreciate that. Elizabeth next in Rochester. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi there. I agree with what you just said about AI, and I think what's important is that all new technologies serve the community. And to follow up on that question, I'm wondering when the staff at XXI is going to unionize, and if the people at the Newspaper Guild can help you do that.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you. That question, I'm sure my bosses are thrilled that that's come up on the air. That question has come up over the years, and it in any place that is not yet unionized, I think it is possible that it will come up again. I am not well-versed enough in every conversation that's ever been had in this, but I've been here for 10 years. It goes back long before me. I can't tell you the history of how workers have decided how they want to pursue their situation. And I don't want to speak out of school. I will only just ask our guests in studio if there's anything you want to add to what Elizabeth said.
I appreciate the way that she got you stammering like that live on air.
I'm not stammering.
I will say this. We have the Newspaper Guild of Rochester was created in 1935 and has gone through many different forms since then. And it does not always need to be an adversarial relationship. I am of the opinion that it's always worthwhile for workers to consider the ways that their interests could be served collectively as opposed to one-off. I don't know anything either about the history of that at WXXI. From what I observe, your locally based corporate overlords are much less harmful than our corporate overlords, which is a good thing. But I'll leave that to the journalists of WXXI.
And yes, we'll help them organize.
Elizabeth, thank you. Hal in Dansville next. Hello, Hal.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. First, Megan Mack and Evan Dawson, as journalists, have done so much for the Genesee Valley. The Genesee River is actually 209 miles from Pennsylvania to Rochester. So thank you, Evan and Megan.
Thank you, Hal. That's a lovely thing to say. And I'm sure there's plenty of oversights we've had in our coverage, but we appreciate feedback from people like you all every day.
Yeah, but I can't emphasize it enough. The variety and depth of your coverage is just awesome. Okay, now why I really was moved to call was the Democrat and Chronicle used to have wider coverage. And I think when we originally bought our farm over 30 years ago in rural New York, we even had a DNC box to put a newspaper in. But I found, generally speaking, as I think is generally recognized, that the effect of the migration of advertising from print to internet has really had such a devastating effect universally on journalism, which, you know, you are stars of. So when many, for example, there was a Hornell paper and there was a Dansville paper, Dansville, New York, Hornell, New York, that used to actually have letters to the editor and some, and a local editor, actually. That's the key thing, having an editor who actually tries to grasp issues. And they're basically become syndicated childs of a corporation that has nothing to do with the area. So we're lucky in Livingston County to have the Livingston County News, which tries its best as part of a Batavia regional system that will actually publish letters to the editor. Or one of my regular harps is we don't have high-speed internet. We don't have cable. We hardly have any broadcast, or really don't have broadcast. So we're kind of part of rural America, and we're very happy to have journalists at smaller papers like the Livingston County News still doing their job, as we're thrilled to have Evan and Megan and others at WXXI. So I just wanted to give this larger perspective of the Genesee Valley, which it's easy to think that the DNC once was just an awesome newspaper.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Hal, thank you. I mean, I'll let our colleagues from the Democrat and Chronicle and the News Guild of Rochester, just joining us, members of the News Guild of Rochester, are on strike, 24 members on strike, hoping to settle with Gannett as soon as possible. And they just want Gannett, they say, to bargain in good faith. They think it's possible to get it done this week. We will see. Part of what Hal's talking about is a good redirection of a point that I was raising earlier, which is, you know, newsrooms shrink. I've brought this up many times just because it's my sort of my own little bubble. But so I grew up reading the Plain Dealer in Cleveland. I think in my early days, there was this maybe an afternoon paper still, but, you know, it was the Plain Dealer for me growing up. And my friends and colleagues there now say they've got, you know, 30 to 40 journalists there now. And they had 330 when I was a boy. I mean, it's a huge, huge change. But it's not just the Clevelands or even the Rochesters or the New York Times or the Post. It is absolutely the small papers and the small communities. And we need thriving print journalism everywhere. And I don't know what you do without it, because now I think we've talked about on this program, we've talked about with experts who've literally broken down how government corruption doesn't get picked up and the cost to taxpayers when it doesn't and what journalism could do. So I think Hal's making a good point. I just don't know what gets done about it, Justin.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, the DNC used to have a Dansville bureau, believe it or not. Our Newspaper Guild of Rochester, as of the last few years, includes reporters in Canandaigua. And before the merger with the Messenger Pulse Papers, that was its own thriving entity. Now it's sort of in our protectorate. I don't know about Kayla or Tracy, but Marquell and I both got our start at those small regional papers. I started in Auburn, Marquell started in Utica. Mm-hmm. And we, for sure, you can really in those small towns see the value of having a reliable source of news. That's part of our hope with our contract, is not only that we get ourselves on stable footing, but there are a lot of smaller units within Gannett, Utica being one of them, that have a harder time organizing because they have so few people and they're at such a disadvantage compared to the enormous corporation. And if they can point to our high quality contract, then that helps them get along a little bit better. There's no question that for companies like Gannett, it's a difficult landscape to work through. That reliance on advertising and kind of the traditional business model is what Gannett has always followed, and it's not working anymore. Everybody can see that. That's a major part of our general position, is you need to turn away from just that focus and come to a more collaborative approach, relying on the talents of your reporters in the newsroom, if we have any hope at all of getting into a new economic paradigm that will protect journalism in our communities as we know it.
When you were in Auburn, how many journalists were at that paper?
Oh, maybe 10.
Okay. Now how many?
Jeez.
You're guessing here. But
I'm guessing, but fewer than that for sure.
About half maybe?
Could be, yeah.
Okay. And Markwell, you were at Utica, in Utica. What was the value of the experience at a smaller paper for you?
I loved it there, man. I learned how to be a reporter there. I learned how to make connections. I was driving everywhere. I just wasn't in Utica. I was in Herkimer County. I was. Mm-hmm. That's where I really learned how to be a journalist. So we had a newsroom of maybe 12 to 15 people there, and I think it's down to like 5 now. Mm-hmm. But that's where I really, really honed my skills at, and I really appreciated my time there. I got really close to the community, and it was a great place for me. It was a great place for my career.
I think that Hal's raising important points here. I would love to see stronger newsrooms everywhere, and I think this country needs it. So, I mean, I have a bias here, and obviously you're hearing that. So why would Gannett come on with me? Because Gannett should come on and explain their position. They should be willing to explain. Doesn't mean they have to show us every bargained, you know, possible contract offer, but they should explain their position. But of course, they're feeling pinched. Their CEO's, his pay's probably gone down, hasn't it?
It only went up by 14% last year, Evan.
Only 14.
So cut the guy a break.
What's it? What 14% up to what?
He's at $3.9 million this year. In the same year, in calendar year 2023, you're trying to get me in trouble again. In calendar year 2023, the pay of the median Gannett employee went down. Went down. Not talking about inflation, anything. Makes less in 2023 than they did in 2022. He got a raise of 14% up to $3.9 million.
But, you know, the man has to eat.
And if people don't know, he lives in the Rochester area. He lives, I think he lives in Victor.
I don't want to give an address out. Be kind.
I'm not giving an address out. But this is not an abstract concern for him. This is not some far-flung corner of the kingdom. This, I hope, is where he gets his own local news. Mm-hmm. So none of this should be surprising to Mike Reed.
Okay. Hal, thank you. Let me grab another call. This is Joe in Rochester. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Evan. In general, I have not been a fan of unions. In my old industry, the steel industry, I observed the unions not really representing the workers. And as a result, most unionized steel companies are dead now. In Rochester, I would say the RTA is the reason we're the worst district in the country. Having said that, I am a fan of local news. It's critical. The guild members, I support what you're doing. Hold in for a good living wage and keep that AI away as long as possible. So stay strong and thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. We appreciate the phone call. That's someone who Justin Murphy's probably interviewed a few times over the years, Joe Klein.
Once or twice.
So, how do you take that call? He's saying maybe his experience with unions at Klein Steel wasn't all that positive, but he's got your back.
We're appreciative of that. And we have really been touched by not just the support that we got from other union folks or from other journalists, but it's really been wonderful to see the breadth of support that we've gotten. We've gotten statements and messages of support from almost all of our local elected officials across the political spectrum. That's not something that we personally went and asked them for, because we wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. But for instance, Senator Schumer contacted Gannett and our local leadership directly, encouraging them to bargain with us. People like Joe Klein is one who, in general, are not pro-union people, but they understand the value of what we in particular are working for here.
And let me just ask the chair of the Newspaper Guild, when people hear some of the numbers that the average Gannett employee, their pay went down last year, the CEO's pay went up by 14%. You know, people might say, well, look, Tracy, you know, it's not a profitable enterprise anymore. I do think it's fair then to ask why the CEO is getting a 14% raise.
Well, that's exactly it, right?
But is it a profit? Can it be a profitable enterprise?
Well, you know, that That's a mystery far above my pay level. I know Mike Killian in one of our bargaining sessions said he had a meeting with our new corporate overlord. I don't remember. Heather, I think her name is. And, you know, was, oh, we're in dire financial straits and, you know, we're on the brink of ruin. That's not exactly his words, but kind of what he intimated. And it was like, well, cool. Like, open up the book, show us what's happening. Let's roll up our sleeves. Let's, you know, let us know. And then that was, well, that's, you know, that's corporate. That's this, that's that. So, you know, hey, we're here to try to make this work. You know, I mean, the business situation is something that should encourage us and, you know, but we don't have enough information to be able to say. So all we can do is advocate for, you know, fair wages and things like that.
If Mike Reed's pay had gone down, I'd be more worried for you guys.
Yeah.
But he's doing it.
There's money somewhere.
He's doing okay.
Whatever, if there is a solution, whatever it is, it will necessarily be based on continuing high-quality work from trained, experienced reporters. That's inescapable. Unless they're going to go full out on AI, that's going to have to be the foundation of it. So let's start there, and then once we're on board and we can work together, then we'll see what solutions there are.
Barbara in Brighton next. Hello, Barbara.
Hi there. I just want to say to these wonderful folks, I got here in 73. Everybody hated Gannett then, and we hate them to this day. They're pompous, arrogant jerks. I'm really shocked to hear that the guy, that particular guy, lives here. And I say, do give out a...
No.
I know, Barbara.
Barbara, don't make us use the dump button. Come on.
I know. But anyway, so the other thing is I wanted to know how, other than the usual stuff about bringing you donuts and putting money in the FundMe thing, how can the ordinary person... help you in terms of pushing? I mean, where are all the local politicians and the local leaders, you know, places like school boards or any place that, you know, information that you produce is vital for? Where are they and how can we push them to help you?
Why don't you come down to the corner of Maine and Clinton and we'll strategize?
But is there more of an answer?
But yes, by all means, contact your elected officials. You can also contact our leaders directly. I don't think I'm out of line in giving Mike Killian's email.
No, I wouldn't give his cell phone just yet.
I'm not going to give his cell phone just yet.
But you can give anybody his email, sure. Yeah. As long as it's a work email.
It's a work email.
It's not like an iCloud.
I'm Killian, MKILIAN, at Gannett.com. Two N's, two T's. And we don't want people to harass anybody. That's
no,
not
no,
what we're saying.
Don't. Absolutely not.
Please don't.
We want them to say what so many people have said to us on the picket line and online, which is that our work is important and we need to get back to doing it. We need to stop screwing around, being out of work, you know, doing a media tour, talking badly about our own company. We want to go back and do journalism. So let us.
One other point about Barbara's comment there. I mean, certainly it's appropriate for elected officials, if they're concerned about the state of newspaper coverage or journalism, to talk about it. The relationship between journalists and elected leaders is by its own nature somewhat adversarial and should be and always will be. That's not to say it is adversarial in the modern social media parlance. It means that it is not PR. Mm-mm. So there are some politicians who are happy with the downfall of journalism. They are celebrating it. I have been told that directly by some local elected officials, that they don't need journalists and they don't want journalists. That's not true for all of them. Not at all. That is true for some. So, Barbara, to the question you're asking, you know, I mean, you can reach out to anybody you want who's got an email address and see what they think. You may find some elected leaders who are happy with these circumstances. They may see that as a benefit to them. Just an observation. But that's not true for everybody. it's different across the board. We're down to our last minute here. We've been talking to members of the Newspaper Guild of Rochester. They're on strike, and it's an open-ended strike. It's not a one-day strike. It's not a strike on the eclipse day. It's an open-ended strike. Of course, their preference is to have this thing sewn up and done ASAP and back to work for the 24 members. But they are prepared to keep going. And what we have talked about this week is what it would take to get it done. So, Tracy, of all of the things there, you made some progress on wages this morning.
Yes.
You've got AI on the list, but there's probably other things on the list. I mean, is this if you don't meet everything here, we're not coming back? Or do you feel like there's room to give? How close are you?
We're close. We're close. We can get this done. Really, seriously. I don't know what else to say. We're close. And, you know, there is no, like, list where, well, we get this. If we get this and not this, then no. Okay. And this and okay. this. It's just not that simple.
But it's not like you're so far away that you can't even see a deal.
No, not at all.
It's almost not a matter of what are the specific issues left outstanding, because I don't know that any one of them on its own is an enormous deal breaker for either of us. It's more they need to move away from, okay, we'll bargain with you for 45 minutes 3 days from now and stop fooling around and come together in a spirit of finishing it up. That's really the thing that's missing, is just a willingness to do it. Because once the willingness is there, it won't take any time at all.
Exactly.
Can you guys get Mike Reed to come on this program?
Yes.
I don't know that you can.
No.
No. Probably not. I will say, I mean, I have met on this program Mike Killian in the past, and I respect Mike, and I know that you have to work with him, and this has been tough. But Mike would be invited as well here, not only to talk about the negotiations or just the situation, but the future of journalism and how Mike sees it. He's an important part in this community. And Mike, that door is always open for you. So I would hope that we could do that. Mr. Reed, probably not. Well, the door is open too. I want to thank Tracy Schutmacher, Markwell Slaughter, Justin Murphy, Kayla Kane. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Members of the Newspaper Guild of Rochester, reporters for the Democrat and Chronicle, from the whole team at Connections, thank you for listening. We are back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.